WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Hey, what is going on, my beautiful people? Welcome to Current Sports. It is 1 o'clock once again, and I am your host, as always, Al Martin. Again, we have a great show in store for you all, as we have a lot to talk about. In just a moment, around the 1:15 mark, I will be talking with Dan Kilbridge, folks. We'll be talking some MSU hoops and gridiron with him. Of course, he's a sports writer for Michigan State, 247sports.com. Can't wait to talk to Dan. You don't want to miss that. And also, we'll be talking about the NBA playoffs. And, man, last night, boy, I tell you, the Pacers just handed that game to the Miami Heat on a silver platter in the final 5 minutes. You know, Lance Stephenson, a guy who is just unbelievable. For those who saw the game, I mean, that first half and even in the third quarter, I mean, Lance Stephenson could not miss. I mean, the hoop was like an ocean to him, and he was sitting in the boat. I mean, it was unbelievable. He put on quite the show, but then went Ghost Recon in the final 5 minutes. The entire team did. Miami seemed to turn up that defense, and the Pacers team to turn down everything. So, and you got to give props to Miami, though, because they showed why they are the defending champions. They show great poise and great leadership from their two biggest stars, of course, Dwayne Wade and LeBron James. Dwayne Wade and LeBron combined for the final 20 points in that game for Miami. I mean, unbelievable performance. How about Dwayne Wade, a guy who has, you know, missed a lot of the regular season due to an injury and has come into this year's playoffs and has not missed one beat. He was spectacular last night. LeBron James took over when he needed to, and the Pacers just kind of just looked lost. They looked totally lost in those final 5 minutes, folks. I mean, I'm sitting there, you know, and the Pacers, they had a great lead. In the third quarter, they had a great lead. They seemed to respond to every single run that Miami tried to make. You know, certainly, it was a back-and-forth game, but, you know, I thought Indiana, they held down the fort. They held down the fort for most of that game. But when it mattered most, I mean, those are the times that separate the good teams from the great teams. And the Pacers showed that they still have to be poised in those moments. And they simply weren't. They simply weren't. Even though, you know, again, great game for Lance Stephenson. Terrible game for the other superstar on that team, Paul George, who is supposed to be the guy. I mean, if Paul George, if you look at that game, I mean, he shot horrible. Horrible, folks. Horrible game for Paul George. 4 of 16. 4 of 16 the entire game. If he plays just average, just give me an average game, Paul, the Pacers, I think, win that game. Without a doubt. So, frustrating to watch that. It would have been the first time, if the Pacers pulled it off, it would have been the first time in the Big Three era that the Heat had lost the first two games in a series. So, I mean, I was preparing my notes and everything, you know, watching, you know, the duration of that game. I had my notes ready, you know, to make my points about the Pacers winning the game. And then I had to totally throw them in the garbage. So, we'll talk about that game last night. Frustrating for me to watch. I just hate to see a team just give it away to another team, especially this time of the year in the playoffs. And how about the Detroit Pistons, folks? Oh, you guys know, I come on here just about every single day and profess my undying love for the Detroit Pistons. I've been a Pistons fan all my life. And, you know, the Pistons had an opportunity to at least have a top 10 draft pick here, without a doubt. And all of a sudden, things just went totally haywire as those picks winded down. And the Pistons now don't even have a first-round draft pick. And we'll break down the reason why, and I'll tell you why I'm blaming this totally on Joe Dumars. Totally on Joe D. What were you thinking, Joe D? The Joe D, even though he's not even with the squad anymore, the curse of Joe D has reared its ugly head in the NBA draft lottery. I'm frustrated. I almost threw my TV out the window. It's frustrating stuff. So we have a packed show again. We're opening up our phone lines throughout this entire hour like we do each and every Current Sports. Pick up that phone and dial 517-355-9527. Again, that number is 517-355-9527. If you want to call in on anything and give your thoughts on anything we talk about today, I have to remind you all that today is the day, folks, each and every Wednesday night here on Current Sports, Current Sports TV, that is. I sit down with a great guest as we dive into and try to go beyond the X's and O's. And my guest for tonight's Current Sports TV is James Moore. Now, if that name rings a bell, it should if you're a Spartan fan, especially if you follow Spartan football history. James Moore was an outstanding football player for MSU back in the 80s. And has now, you know, had a great career with MSU and went on to do so many great things. And now he's a motivational speaker and is having a lot of success in it. So I'll be sitting down with James Moore tonight. If you want to be a part of that live studio audience, you can do so by simply going online at WKAR.org and signing up for free. It is always a great time, seeing all of your smiling faces each and every Wednesday night as we talk sports. Hopefully to see you guys tonight. It should be a great night for Current Sports TV. All right. Well, without further ado, let's dive right into the show. Here are your Current Sports Quick Hit headliners for this May 21st, 2014. Well, the Softball Classic took place yesterday. The finals of the Softball Classic as Eden Rapids took on Okemos. The Greyhounds played at 5 runs in the second inning, punctuated by a 2-run home run by senior Bailey Baker as Eden Rapids won 6-2, the final of that one. It was the 4th Softball Classic Championship in a row for Eden Rapids. This is what they do, folks, and their 5th in 6 seasons. Now, senior Jamie Leiter, she picked up 2 more wins and had all 4 in the tournament going back to pool play against St. John's in Pewamo, Westphalia. She allowed 10 hits and 2 earned runs in 14 innings on Tuesday against Fowler and Okemos and earned the tournament most valuable player honors. Again, congrats to Jamie Leitner and that outstanding Eden Rapids team. You know, I always equate that Eden Rapids team to, when you talk about the Softball Classic, to the Diamond Classic dominance of that of the Grand Ledge team, Grand Ledge Comets team for in baseball. So congrats to Eden Rapids as they win the Softball Classic. And, you know, it was a great time. I'm just getting back from Cooley Law School Stadium as the Lansing Lugnuts had a early morning game, which is still taking place as we speak, against the Hot Rods. And the Hot Rods right now, after the Lugnuts took a 6-1 lead in the first inning, the Hot Rods have stormed back to leapfrog the Lugs right now. It is a 10-7 lead. Hot Rods at control in the 5th inning. So, man, come on, Luggage, you got to hold down the fort, man. So we'll keep you updated and see how that one turns out. Great time out there, though. It's Kids Day, so there are a lot of kids out there, a lot of schools out there. It is packed, folks, and it's a great day for baseball. Beautiful weather outside. All right, Detroit Lions defensive tackle Nick Fairley was not at the team's organized team activities Tuesday due to a medical procedure. Lions coach Jim Caldwell said he did not know when Fairley would return or what procedure he had done. Fairley's absence comes in the same day that Ndamukong Suh returned to the Lions for OTAs. Now, Detroit declined to pick up Fairley's 5th-year option earlier this year, so we'll see when and if Nick Fairley returns in that regard. All right, now about this shocking news, man, especially for those that are part of the I-Zone, during MSU's men's basketball season. But MSU guard Russell Byrd has announced that he will transfer to the Masters College, which is a Christian liberal arts school 30 miles northeast of Los Angeles, for his final year of eligibility. How about that? Russell Byrd. So no more Birdman calls from the I-Zone. You know, I used to love that, those moments. I mean, even though, you know, Byrd, his career here at MSU certainly was not one that had that met up to the expectations that everyone had for him as he came to the land of the green and white. But the injury-prone Byrd became a fan favorite in his later seasons. Again, never lived up to the sharpshooting billing he had out of high school. His struggles with health and confidence were well documented, and a fresh start may be the best thing for him. This is from a statement from Byrd. Quote, I feel like sometimes when I'm at the gym or Breslin, I doubt myself because of just not living up to the hype and failing in games and not performing through a bunch of negative media. It's been hard for me. It really has. People say, just don't read it or just don't listen to it. That's hard to do. So I'm away from it. I'm more free and can just play basketball. I always wanted to figure that out here. I always wanted to conquer it and perform and be the player I could be, and I could never quite figure it out. That's a statement from Russell Byrd, again, transferring to Masters College which plays in the NAIA. Now, in addition to Bird, MSU forward Alex Gana is, quote, 80% sure that he's done with college basketball, according to Coach Tom Izzo. Quote, he's got another class to take, and that's what he's handling now, but I think he's pretty much made up his mind. There are no secrets. He just doesn't want to do anything until he's 100% sure. That's a statement released from Tom Izzo. Off the court, Ghana's girlfriend gave birth to their daughter last Saturday. So congrats to Alex Ghana. Again, it does not look like he will be returning with the team. So now Bird and Ghana, just like that, in the blink of an eye, could be gone from MSU's men's basketball team. At least we know Bird is gone, but Alex Ghana, again, 80% sure that he's done with college basketball. That's shocking news when it comes to Alex Ghana, folks. All right. Well, Minneapolis, the NFL announced the Super Bowl 52, will be in Minneapolis. How about that? Which beat out the likes of New Orleans and Indianapolis for the big game. So, Minneapolis, they hosted the Super Bowl once before when the Redskins beat the Bills 37-24 back in 1992 at the Metrodome. Now, the city will host the big game in the not-yet-finished $1 billion replacement to the Metrodome set to be completed in the year 2016. So how about that? Out in Minnie, that should be a fun time. All right, the NFL is in more legal trouble with former players, this time for allegedly illegally providing players with painkillers while in the league. My goodness, which caused some to develop addictions and long-term medical complications. Now, this was, released from the lawsuit. Quote, rather than allowing players opportunity to rest and heal, the NFL has illegally and unethically substituted pain medications for proper health care to keep the NFL tsunami of dollars flowing. The lawsuit says of the $9 billion a year league. Now, the group of players suing the league includes former Bears QB Jim McMahon and Hall of Fame defensive end Richard Dent, and has grown to over 500 retired players. Can you believe this? I tell you, the NFL just cannot stay out of trouble as of recently. I tell you, that's our Barbershop Wednesday topic today. And we're asking all of you to call in and weigh in on this topic, whether or not the NFL has become a victim of its own success. What do you think about that? 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Has the NFL become a victim of its own success? I'm interested to hear your thoughts on that. Okay. A couple of young Red Wings have been making waves at the World Hockey Championships this week, while Justin Abdicator and Tomas Tatar each scoring two goals for the U.S. and Slovakia, respectively. Now, Abdicator's two goals helped the U.S. to a 5-4 win over Germany and a spot in the quarterfinals. Tatar helped Slovenia top Denmark, but his team will not make it out of round-robin play. Now, the tournament wraps up Sunday with the bronze and gold medal games in Belarus. And how about this, the Pistons? Yeah, it's a depressing day for me. It was a depressing moment for me last night watching the NBA draft lottery. My lucky Superman underwear did not work. I had on my lucky Superman underwear just ready for the Pistons to take that top pick, but it totally went out the window. I think I'm going to burn those underwear now. I love them, but hey, they certainly are bad luck, I think, now. But coming into the NBA draft lottery, the Detroit Pistons were projected as the number 8 pick because of a trade that sent Ben Gordon and a protected first-round draft pick in this year's draft to the Charlotte Hornets for Corey Maggette. You guys remember that, right? However, if the pick was lower than 8, it will go to the Hornets. And that's exactly what happened, folks. Oh, my goodness. Now, part of the reason was due to the Cleveland Cavaliers, who jumped from the projected number 9 to the number 1 pick in the draft. Detroit now loses its first-round pick in this year's draft. What do you think about it? 517-355-9527. I give you my thoughts right now, just to kind of a snippet as to the rant I'm going to go to later on during our second segment of today's show. I'm blaming this totally on Joe D. Yep, I'm blaming it right on Joe D's shoulders, folks. Oh, boy. But in the rest of the NBA draft lottery, the Cleveland Cavaliers, again, they get the top spot. My goodness, can you believe this? They just have they're having a great year right now. I mean, if you're a Cleveland fan, you get Johnny Football, and now you have the top pick in the NBA draft lottery. My goodness, that's crazy. Again, second straight year for them, and third time in the last 4 years that the Cleveland Cavaliers have had the number one pick. They had only a 1.7% chance of getting the number one pick coming in, and now become the first team since the Orlando Magic back in 1992 and 93 to win the lottery in back-to-back years. Now, to round out the top five, the Milwaukee Bucks came in at number two, 76ers, Philadelphia. They land the third pick, and the Orlando Magic take fourth, and the Utah Jazz end up at five. Now, the NBA draft is set for June 26th. I will be not glued to my TV for that one because the Pistons aren't even in the first round. But anyway, all right, the Miami Heat, they surged back last night to win game two of the Eastern Conference Finals, 87-83 against the Indiana Pacers. LeBron James led the Heat with 22 points and sparked a 12-2 run in the fourth quarter for Miami's final 20 points of the game. Oh, man, Lance Stephenson, he chipped in for 25 for the Pacers. He was outstanding last night. The series is now even at 1-1. And Game 3 takes place in the beautiful city of Miami this Saturday. So there you have that. Those are your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in, give your thoughts on any of those, you can call in at 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports and even tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR. Man, it's a depressing day for me again. The Pistons, how does that happen? Okay, I'm going to reserve my thoughts again. We'll talk about that in our second segment of Current Sports. But in the meantime, let's get to our guest for today's show. He is a sports writer for Michigan State, 247sports.com. We're going to talk a little MSU basketball and football with him. Dan Kilbridge, welcome to the show. How you doing, Dan?
Oh, I'm doing great, Al. How are you?
I'm very well. This is your first. I can't believe this is your first time being on the show. This is long overdue, my brother.
Long overdue, man. A long time in the making. I'm excited.
Definitely. Well, thank you for joining me today, Dan. Let's start with hoops now. Of course, the news this morning that everyone is talking about, at least here at Current Sports, the announced departures of Russell Bird, of course, who is transferring now out in L.A. to the Masters College, and Alex Gana, of course, he's 80% sure that he's done with college basketball. I got to ask you, you know, looking at this, how surprising was this for you when you heard this news, Dan?
You know, it was, I guess it would have been surprising a couple months ago, but Izzo kind of gave us a heads up at the end of the season that this was something these guys were considering. I guess I'd be more surprised with Downa in the whole 80% done thing, which Graham Couch reported this morning, just because he's still got some talent, and I think he could have maybe played somewhere, maybe, you know, Division II or a different school, a lower-level Division I, and made an impact, because he's kind of got an interesting skill set for a big guy and just never had an opportunity to show it. But with Russell Bird, I mean, I really think he's making the right call here. Look, he's going to Southern California. He gets to finally see some playing time, and he's got some family friends out there with both of his parents attending the Masters College. It sounds like his fiance Clarissa Bell is going to go with them, and
right.
You know, I'm happy for him. He gets the warm weather and hopefully an opportunity to kind of go into a no pressure situation where he can finally realize his potential, because people forget he was an elite recruit. Kentucky wanted him, Duke wanted him. I mean, he was pursued by every school in the country, and it just didn't work out because of injury and a few other things.
So you do think, you know, like you said, Russell Bird, he was a highly touted recruit. I mean, it just didn't really, I mean, with the injuries that he had, really did damage to his confidence, to say the least. So do you think that Bird is making the right move in this regard, in that regard, I should say?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think, you know, maybe he could have come in and earned some minutes next season, kind of like Austin Thornton did as a senior after he'd slumped for a while, kind of learned how to play defense and rebound and do some things. But this way, you know, I think this career has really taken a toll on Russell Bird mentally, because there are a lot of people that wanted to see him succeed. He had so much support and just couldn't quite get it going outside of the practice gym. But you and I saw him. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's one of the most, he's got one of the best strokes and is one of the best practice shooters I've ever seen.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. yeah, so, practice. Yeah. He can definitely light it up, Dan.
Oh, yeah. So maybe you get out to that warm weather and it'll heat up on the court again.
Yeah, we would definitely see. Now, you know, with Gana gone now, and, you know, with Payne, of course, going to the NBA draft, the inside presence for MSU now yields a question mark in my eyes now, Dan. Who do you see stepping up? I'm sure Matt has got to be, definitely, he should be in the gym right now.
Right. Yeah, and, no doubt. And I look at the front court right now, I think there's a couple different ways they could go with it. You've got to assume Costello starts at the five, And then I think, you know, you're either looking at Dawson at the four or possibly Kaminsky with Dawson playing some three. And then you can't forget Gavin Schilling either, who's probably going to earn some time. So I think it'll be a, kind of those four guys going in and out. Just depends on how Izzo wants to do it. And this is a big year for Gavin Schilling. You know, he's got the body, he's got the skill set, and I just think the game looked like it was moving a little too fast for him at times as a true freshman. So I really think he could step up and have a big year, and this is a big year for Costello, too, not only in the post, but from a leadership perspective with a couple of guys gone. So I think Costello and Gavin Schilling, those are the two guys I'm looking at that really need to take their game up a level in order to make up for what MSU loses in the post.
Ladies and gents, we are talking with Dan Kilbridge of Michigan State's 247sports.com. Now, you know, Dan, something that was so that was talked about time and time again was the soaring expectations for this last year's MSU men's basketball team. I mean, they had everybody and their mama, including Barack Obama, choosing them to win the entire thing, the entire enchilada in the NCAA tournament. Now with the departures of guys like a Payne and, of course, Appling and, you know, Gary Harris taking their talents elsewhere, you know, I got to ask you now, Dan, looking at this roster now, what are your any early predictions for you for this upcoming basketball season? I know it's certainly early, but looking at things on paper right now, what do you think of this squad?
I think it's going to be a team that Izzo's going to like to coach, and I think he's said that before. On paper, to me, it kind of looks like the 2006-07 team, which really overachieved a little bit. They beat number one Wisconsin at Breslin Center, made it to the second round of the tournament before running into a really tough North Carolina team. And they were just a sort of grinded out team that did not have those high expectations. And I think Izzo really likes that. You know, he likes these guys to sort of assume an underdog role. And that's probably what it's going to be. But I still look at the roster and think, one, there's a lot of talent there and some things that they can do. And two, the Big Ten's probably going to be down a little bit with everything that Michigan loses. I think Wisconsin clearly looks like the best team right now. But other than that, I mean, it's not there's not three or four teams that you look at and say, oh, well, Michigan State can't contend with those guys. I think it's going to be a close race. And Michigan State's going to be right there. It just depends on, you know, like I said, whether or not Costello and Schilling and guys like that can develop. And also, too, I think with Gary Harris gone, Elvin Ellis is going to be a key guy going into his sophomore year. He showed some flashes last year, and he's definitely an athletic kid and not afraid to take control on offense. So I'm interested to see what he can do. And right now I think this is going to be a team that MSU fans really enjoy watching. Now, it might take a couple of months to get everything together, so they're going to need to be patient, but I think this is going to be a fun season for the Spartans.
Yeah, I agree too, Dan. I mean, they certainly have some places of potential for a lot of players to come in and definitely blossom at, so definitely looking forward to that. All right, well, let's shift things to the MSU gridiron now, Dan. I got to ask you, of course, you were at the spring game and got a glimpse, sort of a sneak peek, and you got to take it with a grain of salt because it is the spring game, but what did you see from that game areas of positivity for this team for MSU fans coming into the football season in August?
Well, you're absolutely right. You never want to look too much into spring football,
right?
Or the spring game, just because the offensive lines are divided. It's hard to get a read on a lot of different things.
Right.
But I'll tell you what stood out to me. Number one, the pass rush. We all know what Shalik Calhoun can do, but he was actually doing it in the spring game against Jack Conklin. Who was an excellent left tackle as a redshirt freshman last year, and Calhoun kind of threw him around a little bit. And then on the other side, Demetrius Cooper, man, he for a redshirt freshman, I don't know how many people know his story, he actually weighed 197 pounds when he came to East Lansing, and now he's up to about 240, 245. And probably,
wow.
You know, the guy, he put on about 50 pounds, and probably the guy that I've heard the most positive things about on scout team last year. So the pass rush really stood out to me. And then also I thought the defensive backs looked pretty good. You know, some of that was due to some poor quarterback play, but five interceptions And it looks to me right now that Michigan State is going to be able to overcome the loss of Darquez Denard and Isaiah Lewis, which is hard to believe considering how good those two players were. But, man, they have really stockpiled some defensive back talent in East Lansing, and I think that's going to be another strength this year.
Yeah, if there's one thing you can depend on with the MSU football team, it is certainly the defense. Hats off to Pat Narduzzi. I mean, he does a fantastic job each and every year getting those guys ready. So, Dan, I mean, will this be another Rose Bowl contending team? Do you think so?
I mean, I don't see why not, especially when I look at the schedule. I mean, you've got Nebraska, Michigan, and Ohio State at home. And obviously the road game at Oregon is going to be a tough one. But other than that, I mean, they go to Penn State, they go to Maryland, they go to Indiana and Purdue. Those are all winnable games on paper. And I really think it's going to come down to a couple things. One, we've got to see how the offensive line responds with losing three starters. You know, Finotti and France and Treadwell were outstanding and really underrated last year.
Right.
But I think they do have some guys that can come in. And then also I'm looking at defensive tackle and middle linebacker. How does Tywan Jones fit in, especially considering he's got some huge shoes to fill with what Max Bull was able to do? And then on the interior of the defensive line, you lose Mekaja Reynolds and Tyler Hoover, sort of the unsung heroes of that defense last year. So those are the three keys, I would say, offensive line, defensive tackle, and middle linebacker. Those three spots come along. Considering the schedule, I don't see any reason why MSU can't be back in Indianapolis for the Big Ten title game.
Yeah, definitely. Now, Dan, I want to talk a little bit recruiting before we let you go. I'm sure you've been tracking the members of the incoming 2014 recruiting class. I know it's all speculation at this point, but who stands out to you as a potential impact player both this year and looking toward in the future?
Well, that's a good question. I've been catching up with a lot of these guys over the past few weeks and doing stories on them over at SpartanTailgate.com. And one thing that has been consistent is all the defensive tackles tell me that the coaching staff has told them to be ready to come in and compete for a spot right away. So I think they're definitely looking at playing Enoch Smith Jr. out of Chicago, or also Craig Evans, who was a Wisconsin commit at one time and decommitted later. Those are two guys that could be early impact. And on offense, I mean, they've got some really good players. I really like the running backs they have. And Madre London out of Florida, he's a balanced guy. And then Gerald Owens out of New Jersey weighs 255 pounds. And he is a running back. I mean, I saw him at a camp last summer and thought, oh, here's a defensive tackle.
255? Oh, my goodness.
255, yeah. And he said he wanted to, you know, maybe slim down to 250, 245 before he gets into camp. But he's kind of that Jerome Bettis type. And so I don't know if there's room at running back with all the guys they have there, but those are two guys that I really think could be an incredible 1-2 punch, kind of like Javon Ringer and J.U. Culkert were early in the D'Antonio era in that backfield.
Oh, looking forward to see if that pans out. Now, is there any a recruit that no one is talking about? Any potential maybe two-star hidden gems in this class maybe?
I think, you know, actually a lot of these guys are pretty highly rated, which is different than we saw 4 or 5 years ago. You know, this is a pretty respected class nationally. I think one guy who's kind of flown under the radar is Montez Sweat. A lot of schools were looking at him as a tight end, and he's actually going to play defensive end in East Lansing. He's about 6'6" and really has the look of another good one. And also, David Beadle from Clarkston, Michigan, at defensive tackle. And one more for you, Jalen Watts Jackson is a cornerback out of St. Mary's. He only had a couple more offers from, I believe, Eastern Michigan, Central Michigan, and Idaho. But I think he's going to be a really good cornerback. He's an athlete. And those are just a couple guys that I would consider maybe below the radar.
Wow, well, they're definitely on my target list now, Dan. Thanks for that. And, you know, before I let you go, Dan, I want to talk about the NFL draft really quickly. Of course, Darquez Denard was the only Spartan taken in the draft, which was really surprising for me. What were your thoughts on that? And, you know, did you really think that the other Spartans would be drafted other than Darquez?
Well, number one, I'm disappointed my Chicago Bears didn't take Darqueze Dennard.
Right. They could have used him, right?
What's that?
They could have used him, right?
Oh, exactly, man. I thought he would have been a great fit in Chicago. But, no, Cincinnati looks good for him. Other than that, man, I mean, Michigan State had, like, five or six guys that were all thought of as fringe picks, you know, because once it gets into the sixth or seventh round, there just is nothing guaranteed. You don't know what teams are thinking in those rounds. A lot of times they'll reach for a guy who maybe didn't do as much in college, but they think has the potential to develop. And Michigan State really just had a lot of tweeners. And what I mean by that is guys who are outstanding players that maybe on paper don't look like great fits on an NFL roster. Like with Danicos Allen, you know, I think scouts think he is undersized and too small to play linebacker and not, fast enough to play defensive back. But, you know, those guys have played a ton of football. They really passed the eyeball test. And I think Max Bulla's suspension in the end did hurt him because he was the one guy that really everyone seemed to agree would get a look either in the fourth or fifth round, and it didn't happen. So I do think that suspension hurt Bulla, and now it's just up to these guys to go into camp and compete for a spot.
As far as those landing spots for those Spartans who did, have those undrafted signee contracts, did you like any of the landing spots for both Darqueze and the others?
Yeah, I do like Darqueze going to Cincy with Marvin Lewis and also Isaiah Lewis, too, getting in there. I think that'll be a good fit for him. One fit I do like, too, is Tyler Hoover with the Colts. I've always said that I think Tyler Hoover could be an effective 3-4 defensive end because of his size, and that's what the Colts run on defense. So I think he's a good fit. And Max Bulla with the Texans also. Bulla is really – he seems like a Texan guy, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. I can see him there.
He's just kind of got that cowboy mentality. So
right.
I think those two are good fits. And I still say Danicos Allen, you know, with the Panthers, I think he's going to be a great special teams player, and I really think he'll stick around and find a spot.
Oh, that's great stuff. All right, Danny, before I let you go, I see you have a pretty cool initiative for all of our listeners out there. You can try Spartan Tailgate totally free, right, until the football season starts.
Oh, I'm glad you asked, Al. yes, we do. Over at 24/7 Sports right now, we're running a promotion where you can try us totally free until football season, which starts August 29th against Jacksonville State. And to get signed up for that, just go to www.michiganstate.247sports.com. We've got all the latest team and recruiting news from myself and Sean Shear, and also longtime area columnist Jack Ebling with his weekly columns as well. So give us a try. It's michiganstate.247sports.com. Totally free until football season.
Oh, you heard it, folks. I will be definitely locked in, Dan. All right. Thanks a lot. Again, that's Dan Kilbridge of michiganstate247sports.com giving us the inside scoop on MSU hoops and MSU football. Well, let's hit the break. When we come back, we will shift gears a little bit and talk about last night's Heat and Pacers game, the Heat, even in the series against Indiana. And the Pistons, how about them? Snubbed in the first round. We'll talk about all of that and so much more. Don't go anywhere. Current Sports comes right back. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, now joined by Alex Sharg and Matt Luckey. Fellas, let's talk a little NBA. Well, I guess we'll start off before I get to the depressing story for me of the day concerning the Pistons getting snubbed in the first round of the NBA draft lottery. The Heat and Pacers, they got it on last night as the Heat even things in really an unbelievable fashion to close out that game, to close out that fourth quarter. LeBron James, he went off. He had 22 points. Dwayne Wade also chipped in. For the Pacers, Lance Stephenson, he was unbelievable. He had 25 points for the Pacers. But I tell you what, guys, for me, looking at that game, the Heat seemed to coast defensively throughout the first three quarters of the game. I mean, they allowed a lot of points in the paint. They didn't seem as adamant on making dribble drive stops. But all of a sudden, the Heat kind of turned up things defensively. I want to give I would be remiss if I didn't mention Chris Anderson, Birdman, who I thought was kind of the catalyst in that regard defensively for the Miami Heat. He seemed to make some great stops and really kind of tune up the energy on the defensive end for the Miami Heat. And once that happened collectively, once the Heat turned up that defense, Indiana seemed to panic, if you ask me. I mean, I saw about three turnovers in clutch situations, you know, a 2-4 point game where the Pacers just gave it up, just totally just did not look totally lost offensively and gave the Miami Heat the basketball. The Pacers had the game in many regards, I thought. Lance Stephenson was unbelievable. He was unbelievable. He couldn't miss anything. Those first three quarters, I mean, he really brought it. I got to give a shout-out to Lance Stephenson because he showed what you can do and how you beat the Miami Heat. And a lot of it had to do, I mean, some of the stuff he was throwing up, I mean, was just, he was in a zone, a complete zone.
Yeah,
complete zone.
He was in a zone to flop as well. Let's not forget.
Everybody flops in the NBA. We saw LeBron flop last night. You know, did you see the play where LeBron, like, goes out of bounds and runs into the first row with the guy, you know, and he lands between his legs.
As much as everyone in the NBA flops, I don't know if you two agree, but I'm surprised that it comes in the playoffs. You think that you wouldn't really have that mindset come playoffs. You're not trying not to get anything cheap. You figure you leave it all out on the court and you play what's fair. That's my mentality of a playoff game. I don't remember watching any flopping when it comes to prior playoffs before.
Oh, it happens all the time. What playoffs are you watching? I see flopping all the time in the NBA. Just about every game I see at least one flop. You're guaranteed at least one flop.
Yeah, during the season, but you think playoffs in the Eastern Conference.
That's where it turns up.
Did you ever see flops when the Pistons and Spurs were playing back then?
I'm pretty sure you did. I'm pretty sure just Oakley probably took one.
I don't think so.
It happens all the time. Matt, come on. It happens all the time.
You're doing anything you can to win the game.
Yeah,
so,
I see it all the time. Yeah. Jordan used to flop sometimes, too, back in the day. I mean, nobody flops more than LeBron.
I mean, Reggie Miller played in the playoffs.
Exactly.
So, yeah, they're flopping in the playoffs.
But back to the game, guys.
Maybe I'm more upset about how obvious it was. Maybe it's just more obvious now more than ever.
But back to the game. I mean, you actually chose the Pacers to win this series.
I did, yeah.
And your boys totally just, in my opinion, gave the game to Miami Heat. And granted, you know, LeBron James was LeBron James. Dwayne Wade has been another guy who's really just been unbelievable. I mean, like, again, he has not missed a beat since being injured this regular season. And I think right now, what I saw in that game, another aspect was that the Pacers are struggling on how to guard LeBron James, which every team does. I mean, they try to double-team him, and once they double-team him on the drive, LeBron James does his patented kick out to the extra man that's open, whether it be Norris Cole, whether it be Ray Allen, whether it be even Chris Bosh, even though Chris Bosh he couldn't shoot last night. But it happened three times in that fourth quarter where LeBron James made an impact without scoring, which, again, he's a great player and always makes the right decision out there on the court. And he did it three times in a row where he dribble drove, the double team came, the kick out went to Norris Cole or another player, Chalmers or whatever, and they hit the three. And they got burned so many times on it. And it's hard to guard LeBron because if you double-team him, he is going to find an extra man. And trying to rotate and get to that extra man to try to contest the shot can be very challenging. So I definitely felt for the Pacers in that regard. But, man, I just thought that the Heat down the stretch, though, were the more poised team. And, again, poise separates the good teams from the great teams, and we saw that down that stretch of that game.
Absolutely. I would say more so than the Pacers just kind of collapsing and giving the game away, I feel like the Heat just took it. Mm-hmm. I mean, Wade and LeBron score 22 in the fourth quarter. I mean, they're down a couple points, and LeBron spurs that 12-2 run with a three, a jumper, and a steal that ended with a Wade dunk off a missed layup. And it just seemed like when it got down to, you know, quote-unquote winning time, the Heat took control.
Right.
The Pacers basically were operating with hoping Lance Stephenson could do something, and they had nothing else.
Yeah, that's it.
And Paul George, 4-for-16.
Terrible.
David West, 5-for-16.
Right.
I mean, they just didn't have guys to hit shots, and it seemed like, you know, there were far too many possessions that the Heat forced the Pacers to rely on guys like Luis Scola to make a play. There were so many possessions ended with a missed Luis Scola, like, running layup.
Yeah.
And it
yeah.
was just, it was shocking how well Miami forced Indiana out of a comfortable offense and made them kind of scramble and freelance, and they just weren't able to do that in a way that produced buckets.
Yeah, it came down to Miami's defense.
Yep.
At the end of the day, that's what won Miami the game down that stretch because, again, like you said, man, they forced Indiana to be – they seem very – they seem frantic
yep.
at times. In those final 5 minutes, it seemed as though they just didn't know what to do. Once Miami started getting in their face and really pulling up the shorts and getting down to defensive stands – and trying to get in the passing lanes and whatnot, Indiana just seemed to close up and curl up into a ball and say, okay, well, I guess the Heat are better than us now, and they're proving it right now, and we're not going to respond in any way. That's exactly what I saw. Alex, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, the only other thing I would add compared to what you two have already said was that LeBron just physically took more of a role, I think, this time than before. I mean, when it came to rolling up the shorts on defense, I mean, physically, every time the Pacers drive in the fourth quarter, I didn't see a lot, but from what I saw in highlights, it looked like Miami physically got in the way. They were moving their feet. They always had a hand up in their face. It wasn't just like, you know, stay in front and let them kind of shoot. They literally physically had more of a role, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I understand where you're going with that. And, you know, and there was a moment that I know, I even tweeted this last night watching the game, where defensively for the Pacers, they just didn't seem engaged defensively at all. I mean, I saw, looking at the contrast from how Indiana played defense in that fourth quarter to how Miami really buckled down and played defense in that first quarter. I mean, it looked like two totally different teams. And I saw Indiana, a lot of Pacer players standing up when LeBron had the ball, as opposed to Miami, where everybody is just engaged and everybody's talking and pointing at each other. I mean, it showed you what a championship team looked like. It showed you what championship poise looked like. And the Pacers are going to have to, in those moments, those are when you win the games in the playoffs. In that fourth quarter, when it's 5 minutes left and it's a close game, because this series has potential to go seven, without a doubt. And those moments are going to really tell a lot about how bad you want to win this series and how bad you want to win an NBA championship, without a doubt. So I think it's going to be a great series. I'm still going with Miami in six, just like I predicted before the series. But if you're the Pacers, you got to be encouraged in how you had the lead, you know, and the way you played in those first three quarters. If you can duplicate that performance, I think you make a hell of a series out of this thing. But as Paul George has got to play better. At the end of the day, Paul George, to me, again, if he just plays relatively well, this average, an average Paul George, I think the Pacers take a 2-0 lead in that series. And I don't want to put it all on his shoulders, without a doubt. I mean, this is a team game. There's a lot of moving parts and pieces to this puzzle that led to the demise of the Pacers in those final moments. But Paul George, if you're the man of this team, and if you're the leader of this team, if you're the superstar on this team, you got to show up in that moment, without a doubt.
You really do. You have to take control and be that franchise player. And the one other big thing to me was that Indiana was getting a lot of easy buckets in the first three quarters off of backdoor cuts, just taking advantage of Miami kind of being a little lazy defensively, especially,
right.
And I know this is, you know, sacrilege to call him out, but especially LeBron. I mean, he was asleep on a couple backdoor cuts.
Look at the Lance Stevenson tip at halftime.
Just, oh, boy.
That
yeah,
nice.
He just got torched. But then the fourth quarter, they flipped that switch like we've seen him do so many times. Mm-hmm. You know, they're blitzing pick and rolls, making Indiana adjust on the fly, and they just weren't able to do it. And when a team makes you do that and they're taking away easy baskets, you have to rely on something, and that should be Paul George if he's going to be that franchise player, and
right.
He just didn't have it.
And, you know, he hit that one big three-pointer to, I think, you know, put Indiana up by one, I think it was.
Yep.
And I sat there and said, okay, he's back to life, and, you know, we're about to see the Pacers really take off in this thing.
And, you know, the game wasn't even as close at the end as the score indicates because
no.
Indiana just was hitting, you know, bombing threes in the last 10 seconds to get it close.
Oh, yeah, it was close.
I mean,
close.
This,
yeah.
it was like an 8-point Miami lead late in the fourth, and then Indiana started hitting threes. But Miami just dominated the fourth quarter. And, you know, the one other thing I'll say is the bench. Indiana, for all the moves they made to help their bench, they did nothing last night. Their bench guys combined 3 of 13 shooting for 9 points.
That's terrible.
Norris Cole had 11 by himself.
Right, right, exactly.
You can't get that kind of, you know, production off your bench and expect to win in the playoffs.
Exactly. You know, and it's so funny you bring it up because, you know, the Pacers bench was being so praised coming into this series, and we had a lot of doubts about Miami's depth.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And that was the exact – that what we saw last night was the exact opposite of that argument. Okay, guys, so let's talk about the depressing topic of today. The Detroit Pistons, folks, they do not have a first-round draft pick. Can you believe that? Oh, boy. You know, it was so frustrating, you know, looking at the draft lottery last night, you know, hoping. I had on my Superman underwear. I was ready. I was like, yes, the Pistons are about to, you know, I can feel it. I can feel the luck happening. And then the totally exact opposite happened. And Cleveland, how about Cleveland? Cleveland gets the number one pick again, yet again, folks. But, you know, this all comes to light because the Pistons were projected as the number eight pick because of a trade that sent Ben Gordon and a projected first-round draft pick in this year's draft to the Charlotte Hornets for Corey Maggette. Yes, you all remember that move. Now, the outcome is the result of that move, a move that saved the Pistons $14 million. And a move that now looks very, very unwise. Now, you know, Pistons owner Tom Gores, going back in time for a minute, guys, he could have okayed using the amnesty clause on Gordon. If you don't know what the amnesty clause is, it's kind of a transaction that allows for the waiving of a player and exercising his salary from the cap. The player still receives a compensation in the end. But the idea was to get rid of Gordon's unwieldy contract to create cap space for last summer. The plan went totally awry when Joe Dumars, gotta love him, former president of basketball operations now, decided to use that cap space on who else than Josh Smith. And now the Pistons do not have a first-round draft pick. And that is why, that rundown is why, I am blaming this totally on Joe Dumars' just idiocracy. When it happened, I could not believe. I knew it would happen because we all knew this was coming. That was part of the clause that the Pistons had with the whole trade. I knew it was coming, but man, I did not think it would come this year. A year where, I mean, a lot of people are projecting this draft to be deeper than, you know, the past 5 years in this year's upcoming draft class. So I was so frustrated watching it, guys. What were your thoughts on it?
Honestly, the only silver lining is that the Pistons sent the pick to the Charlotte Hornets,
yep,
and not the Bobcats.
Not the Bobcats,
that
right?
Is the only good thing that you can take out of this. And really, I mean, you blame Joe D, but Tom Gores is just as much at fault.
Yeah, it's on his fault too. Yeah.
I mean, yep. $14 million to an NBA owner is pocket change. Pay the right man, keep your pick. I can guarantee if he could go back in time right now, he would amnesty him in a heartbeat.
Yes, without
a doubt. It's not like Corey Maggette gave the Pistons anything.
Nothing.
I mean, I feel like people are surprised he was even on the team.
Right.
Keep the pick.
Keep the pick.
You got to keep future assets. You take the immediate loss, and you keep yourself in a better standing in the future. They didn't do that, and now they're paying the price.
I don't
it's
know what they
depressing.
Were thinking, man. I
it
don't
is.
Know what they were thinking during that time. Alex, what are your thoughts on this, man?
Poor Stan Van Gundy is my thought. Mm-hmm. And the reason I say that is because we had a debate last week about the NBA draft combine and whether that was legitimate. Well, it turns out that I read something where the moment Stan Van Gundy was hired as the director of operations and the head coach, he flew out there to the combine to get an early look on some of these picks and to see what some of these guys can do. None of the other coaches really went to this. Stan was the only guy there really attending this combine and really scouting. And then, boom, you fly out there. You're all excited to take this first job.
Wasted gas money.
And
right?
Boom. Yeah, it's wasted gas money. Exactly, Al. And can you imagine, if you took a job somewhere, you're all excited. I'll think of a good example later, but it's just such a letdown. It's his first duty as a coach and as director of operations, and he's told that he can't have the draft pick now. That's a horrible start for Stan.
And you know, he approached it very classy, coming out and saying, hey, you know, hey, we knew this would come either this year or next year, and we were still confident we would get a solid pick in the second round, but my good golly, Really? I cannot believe it happened. I had to like do a double take when it, I actually rewinded my DVR to see if it really happened. And it when it happened, I'm sitting there like, you got to be kidding me.
And the worst part is, you know, the team that leapfrogs them is the Cavaliers.
Cavaliers.
Are you joking?
I can't believe it. They just get rewarded for just
for being
terrible
awful.
Play. Exactly.
Terrible play and terrible team building.
Right.
And they're here. We're going to keep handing you number one picks until you get this right.
Oh, man.
Hey, guys, but I did say it. I did say it
you
yesterday.
You said that's who needed it the most. I would disagree with
No.
I disagree with that.
I said the Magic needed it the most. I said I'd watch out for the Cavs to jump up to a number one spot given their history.
Yeah, you did say that day. Yeah, because you said if we had an opportunity to give the number one pick to somebody, you would give it to Orlando. But man, and I think that the system now, it needs to be changed. I don't know. It's ridiculous. The Cavs, year after year after year, something needs to be changed. I mean, they're rewarded for just stupid picks. Year after year after year.
Now, are you saying changing the whole lottery system
or
just like the top eight thing?
Changing
the top eight ordeal.
I don't know how it should be changed. I need to sit down and ponder that, but it needs to be changed in some regard.
It sounds like a barbershop Wednesday.
Yeah, anytime a team that's like the Cavs, who has gotten, three of the last 4 years, top picks, the number one pick in the NBA draft, and you are still terrible, that's a problem. And for them to keep getting this year after year after year, the system is flawed, without a doubt, I think.
I mean, it's not flawed. It's simply odds. Anything, it's even a 0.1% chance it could happen.
Alex, this team is garbage and has year after year after year made terrible decisions with that number one pick. And the NBA keeps rewarding them through the NBA draft lottery system with the number one pick. Something is wrong and needs to be changed. I think something.
Yeah,
wrong.
But then you're faulting the team for the correlation between.
I'm faulting the system,
right?
Not
but,
the team.
But that has nothing to do with how the team spends the pick. Just if the but so you're saying if the team actually had good draft picks, if Cleveland actually had guys that panned out, let's say the Cleveland with the two number one picks, they drafted guys that were just as good as LeBron. Would this not even be a conversation?
Of course not, because
exactly.
They wouldn't be in the lottery.
Yeah, they wouldn't be. They wouldn't be in the draft lottery. If the team is good, we wouldn't be talking about it.
They'd probably
right
be
now.
In the playoffs right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not that they're in the lottery. They were in the ninth spot, which means it's not like they're the bottom of the league. Just because you don't make the playoffs doesn't mean you're such a bad team. We see all the time where teams getting snubbed from the eighth spot and eight seeded teams actually making some kind
Alex,
of a run.
Especially in the East, in the Eastern Conference this year. You know how bad the East was. Come on. We're not Stevie Wonder or Ray Charles here. We saw what happened.
The East was bad.
And the East
sure
was terrible. It's probably it's arguably the worst year for the Eastern Conference in the history of the league. And for not make the top eight teams to make the NBA playoffs, you're bad. You're really, really bad.
Right, but the point in refining it shouldn't be because a team is bad with their picks. That's what I'm arguing.
If you constantly make bad picks and you constantly are bad and you get rewarded by keep having these number one picks in the NBA draft, I think something needs to change.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, it's not only that they had the number one picks. I mean, they had the number one and four picks in 2011.
Right.
They had the number four pick in 2012. I mean, they've been to the lottery every year since LeBron left.
Right.
And it's not like they're getting any better.
Not at all. I'm trying to look up the draft history.
2011, they take Irving and Tristan Thompson. 2012, they take Deion Waiters. 2013, they take Anthony Bennett, number one.
Anthony Bennett, yes, that's the one I wanted to get to.
Who had the second worst PER among rookies in the NBA last year, and he was the top pick.
Anthony Bennett was terrible.
If anything says incompetent management, it's that.
That's it.
And you know, here
they just fire Mike Brown too, right?
Another chance. Yeah, they fire Mike Brown, who they fired before.
Right.
Sign him to a 5-year contract and fire him after one season.
Oh boy.
They signed Andrew Bynum to a huge deal.
Yep.
I mean, it just seems like it's brutal.
It makes no sense.
Just got Johnny Football.
Right, exactly. You know, we sound bitter. We may sound bitter right now, but I'm just saying. I'm just speaking facts here, and it's a little anger behind it, without
a doubt. I just can't wait till they take Doug McDermott, number one overall.
What did they do? I went on record as saying he was going to be a great player yesterday, so
even
I got to stick
to
that. But
I wouldn't be surprised if they do something totally off the wall and crazy.
Right. Oh, well, I heard this morning they're looking at the kid, the center.
Embiid,
yeah, I heard that this morning.
And that
so.
seems like the pick. I mean,
yeah, it could
you know,
be.
You've got Kyrie.
Right.
You might have Luol Deng.
Right, exactly.
I mean, who knows? And people are also saying they draft Embiid and maybe LeBron thinks about coming back. You got
LeBron goes back, two young stars. You know what? I may argue with you guys and say that may be a good move for him to go back to Cleveland now. Looking at the Heat, I don't know. They're getting old. The oldest team in the league. If they do cap it off and win a championship, hey, I don't see them winning any more rings after this year. I think this is their last year to do so. All right. Well, all right, guys. Well, we got 5 minutes left in the show. Oh, man, we didn't get to our Barbershop Wednesday. Well, really quickly, 5 minutes. I want to get your thoughts on this, guys, because the NFL now is definitely under fire once again. Really shocking stuff here. The NFL, more legal trouble with former players, this time for allegedly legally providing players with painkillers while in the league, which caused some to develop addictions and long-term medical complications. And, the question I was asking to you all out there in current sports radio land is, has the NFL become a victim of its own success? We've seen recently, of course, the concussion ordeal where they settled for $765 million with former players who are currently having issues, health issues, due to concussions, multiple concussions suffered during their playing careers that the NFL knew about when it came to long-term concussion effects on their health. And now I think that the NFL during this time, they really thought that what made them successful, the whole ordeal of an NFL player being macho and taking a hit and going back out there, giving some painkillers and going back out there. That whole macho ordeal or mantra in the NFL is what made them successful at the end of the day, and not doing their homework and making sure that the player's well-being came first has now jeopardized the entire perception in today's modern era of sports when it comes to the NFL. And it's really karma for me. I mean, if you're just constantly giving your players painkillers, I mean, that doesn't even sound right. That just sounds shiesty. You know, you just free painkillers? I mean, what? This is a prescription drug you're talking about. And we all know how drugs are. If you take it enough, you eventually can get addicted to it. And that's what these players, I don't blame them for suing the NFL. I say, hey, it's karma, and the NFL shouldn't be surprised this is happening.
Yeah, it's sort of just, you know, the product of years of the NFL valuing the brand over the individual.
Right.
You know, doing everything to bolster the aura of the NFL and protecting the brand and protecting the team, or, you know, taking away from the individual players, you know, at the expense of the individual players. And, you know, by the time the players have to deal with these things, you know, they're already retired and out of the league and kind of out of the NFL's hair. You know, we don't have to worry about you because you're not a part of the NFL anymore. And now they're kind of reaping what they sowed, and the players are fighting back. And, you know, the $765 million concussion settlement. And I think this will probably be a large settlement, too. It just seems like the NFL is starting to have to pay for its past sins.
Right.
And it could jeopardize the future of the league. I mean, we're talking about that with concussions. We might be talking about that with this down the road.
Right.
It just seems like they're getting in a lot of hot water for things that they've done since kind of the dawn of the league.
It is. And, you know, looking into more in depth on this story, I mean, one of the more instances that really just stood out to me and said, are you kidding me, was when players were told that they knew they had broken a bone or conceived that they had broken a bone. They go to the doctor. The doctor doesn't tell them that they had broken a bone, and they're given pills to mask the pain. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, that's like a no-brainer.
That's
lawsuit,
right? I mean, you're asking to get sued, yeah, when something like that happens. I mean, you got to be kidding me. You break a bone, you go to the doctor. The doctor knows about it, doesn't tell you, and just gives you pills to mask the pain.
Right. I mean, Terry Crews.
Yeah,
from
Terry
the
Crews, right. He was on Jimmy Fallon.
He's on Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yeah.
He's, you know, the Adam Old Spice
Sandler's
commercial guy, movie. Adam Sandler's movies. He said in an interview with Sports Illustrated that the NFL is a cult.
Yeah.
He said, you know, they kind of act like your father figure, the team does, and said, you know, you do this for the team, right? You do this for the team. And it puts pressure on a lot of guys to do things that maybe ordinarily they wouldn't do.
Right.
And it's
right.
Just that culture that is so pervasive and powerful that it sends guys down the wrong road.
It definitely does. And, yeah, Terry Crews definitely, he was on Fallon. He was great on Fallon this week, too.
But, great guy. Hilarious.
Great. I love him. All right. Well, you guys have been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, WKAR East Lansing. As always, take care. Have one fantastic Wednesday. And be easy, people.